You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rainy Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King, from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great. It's going to be a mostly Marcus Smart podcast. We got a lot of Marcus Smart to talk about. He returned to practice today, Wednesday, for the first time since swiping his hand into a picture frame at the team hotel, and as he revealed today, almost needing to undergo season-ending surgery. We'll get into what he revealed, the details, the eye-opening details of the shocking near disaster that he apparently barely avoided and was very fortunate to avoid. We got Marcus Smart saying that he did not talk to anyone about his handling his emotions better. And yeah, maybe it's
That's
time.
It's a full analysis of Marcus Smart's return to the lineup after the All-Star break.
Yep, full analysis. And then Brad Stevens saying that he anticipates changing the rotation after the All-Star break, which it's now after the All-Star break. So he now anticipates changing the rotation. Let's start with Marcus Smart. But before we do that, we are the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you do not subscribe to us, you should know, we are the only daily Celtics podcast. We are the greatest Celtics podcast of all time. And we're just fantastic. So to subscribe to us, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. And make sure you subscribe to us. Make sure you give us a 5-star rating. Make sure you send us love.
Yeah, and listen, we had a dope interview series this week. It's going to continue later this week, but go back, listen to the ones with Michael Nye, Dart Adams, Chad Finn. We killed it All-Star break. I didn't do any of work, so that's why I'm like trying to give some love right now, but we had some three great podcasts, so go back and listen to those because they were great content to fill All-Star break. It's been weird not having basketball so far.
It has been weird, but basketball is back, and Marcus Smart is back. And he came back with really a wild press conference. And so the most wild revelation was that he almost missed the rest of the season. He said basically a piece of glass got lodged inside his hand. And,
yikes.
And doctors told him that if it had sliced a tendon and it was very close to two of his main tendons, then he would have missed the rest of the season. And so he was actually very fortunate to only miss 11 games. And he could have missed the rest of the season in a contract year. And he could have missed the rest of the season in a year the Celtics depend on him. And it kind of makes sense because Al Horford said a weird thing like the 2 days after Marcus Smart's injury. And he said something about Marcus Smart. And then he said, but we expect to have him back. And I was kind of like, yeah, like no kidding, man. He just cut his hand. But turns out it was almost a lot worse than just a hand cut. I guess yeah, this just goes to show the perils of striking inanimate objects.
Yeah, no, it's not. Punching glass generally doesn't work out. It's not like the most surprising thing in the world. He was out for a while for just a cut. He had how many stitches? It was some wild amount. It's kind of crazy that in contract year, it could have done all of that to him. I certainly think the Celtics missed his impact. Early on, they won some good games, and they played the best game of the season they've ever had against the Warriors. But they are certainly missing him on the court in the last couple of games. And to think that it was only an inch away from his kind of dumb decision to punch something, from him missing the entire season, would have a huge impact on the Celtics team.
Yeah, just wild. And for the numbers, during his absence, the Celtics were actually outscored by 0.4 points per 100 possessions, which is a lot worse, obviously, than their typical net rating. They gave up a 105.2 defensive rating after the injury versus 99.8 defensive rating pre-injury. So it was pretty clear that Marcus Smart's impact was felt. I thought especially the further the Celtics went on, and especially without Shane Larkin, it was just so obvious that they needed another ball handler. They needed more speed on the perimeter. They needed more playmaking. And they needed, like, quick guys who can switch everything. And that's really been what has allowed the Celtics to be so damn good this season and be atop the league in defense. That's a huge factor, and Marcus Smart's a big part of that. So I do think his return will go a long way toward helping their defense. I do think some of it was just all-star games coming slippage. Like, they just kind of checked out a little too early. But
well, that's also why I think they were missing, like, Marcus Smart's ferocious attitude and his heart and his general, like, never giving up. We're down 20, but he's going to make a crazy play. Like, they did, the team, especially down the stretch there, just did not play with a lot of effort, or I don't want to say effort, but they definitely lacked fight and a willingness to come back from a lead. And it just seemed like in many moments they were lacked the Marcus Smart crazy play. So all the things he actually brings on the court, but then the intangibles, impact, winning. I know it's a cliche at this point, but, like, it was noticeable in the games he was absent.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially when you get down 15, and they've repeatedly gotten down 15 all season.
They're pretty good at that.
They're very good at falling down by 15 points. You kind of need that energy. You need that lift. You need that guy who's going to pick up full, and you need that guy who's going to just be crazy. And Marcus Smart gives you that crazy energy. When everybody else does not have it, he always does. 100% of the time, Marcus Smart has energy. He has that factor that can lift teams. And obviously, he does some stupid stuff. Obviously,
it's the same factor that leads to him, like, punching a picture frame. Like, you would think that it's, like, the same kind of energy.
Okay, let's talk about that, because you can be a super energetic dude without totally losing it and slamming things. Like, it is very possible to be a super competitor and a super energetic basketball player without then having that translate into losing your cool outside of the basketball court. Like, and I know people, like, Danny Ainge was on the radio during Smart's absence and kind of laughed it off, like, yeah, haha, that's kind of Marcus. It's like, well, it shouldn't be Marcus. And if you're going to maximize Marcus, it can't be Marcus. Like, he was lucky when he punched a hole in the wall in Washington that nothing happened to his hand. He's been lucky sometimes that he's avoided suspension. Or did he get suspended when he hit Matt Bonner?
A game, but I don't remember when he very clearly assaulted Matt Bonner's testicles. It was not cool.
Yeah, not cool to assault someone's testicles.
You
can't have that. Those are moments you just can't have. And I know he's young. He's still 23. And I know part of it is just maturity. But there's a long list now, dating back to college, when he attacked a fan. And I know what the fan allegedly said. But still, just keep your cool. Just don't attack people or attack objects or attack walls or attack picture frames. That never goes well. There is no point of doing that. It literally helps nothing. It will never help anything. There is nothing in the world that punching a picture frame could possibly do ever. There's no potential
benefit. There's no gain from that.
There's not.
There's zero gain.
So just don't punch picture frames.
Buying or selling a home, I got to say, is one of the most daunting processes in the world. I've been through both. It is hard. It is stressful. It really grates on you. It's not easy. You need somebody to walk you through the process. You need a real estate agent that knows the market, that knows what your needs are, that knows how to get you what you want in the best way possible without driving you nuts. That's why you should talk to Jason Manganiello. He's got over 15 years experience in the real estate industry, and he's part of the Residential Group, which has been the top selling group in all of Massachusetts at William Ravis since 2009. And that's been done by providing the personal attention of a boutique firm with the resources of a large company. Jason's been buying and selling homes for people for years, but each client, this is probably their first purchase. So Jason knows that each time is not his whatever time it is to sell a house or buy a house or look at a house. It's your first time, and he treats it like that. And it doesn't matter if you're looking to buy a $300,000 condo in Brighton or if you're selling a $2 million home in Weston, he treats it like it's your first time and you've got that special attention to detail. If you are thinking of buying or selling a house, reach out to Jason and he will send you a first-time home buyer's guide. It'll walk you through the process and kind of set you up for what you can expect moving forward. And just for Locked On Celtics listeners, if you buy or sell a home with Jason Manganiello, you will go to a Celtics game on Jason. In fact, you don't even have to buy or sell a house. If you refer a friend to Jason and they end up buying or selling a house, you get to go to a game as well. It's a great deal. If you are trying to sell a house, Jason will be happy to do a free market analysis for your current or future home. And if you just do that, just get the market analysis, you'll be entered to win Celtics tickets as a bonus. And if that's not enough, if having that personal touch is not enough for you, know that buying or selling a house with Jason Manganiello helps the community because Jason donates 10% of his commission to a local nonprofit designated by the client. So if you know any nonprofit that you want to work with as you buy or sell your home, talk to Jason. He will commit 10% of his commission on your purchase or sale to that nonprofit. So please reach out. You can find Jason at LockedOnJason@gmail.com. You can spell it any way you want. You can spell it like Jason Tatum or like every other Jason. LockedOnJason@gmail.com. Or call him, 617-877-5694. That's 617-877-5694. It's a personal touch with the resources of a big firm. You'll go to a Celtics game and help the community just by buying or selling your home. There's no one else to talk to when it comes to this process than Jason Manganiello.
I wish for the benefit of the podcast I could like reasonably argue some sort of other side, but no, you're right. Like, there's so many other basketball players who can play professional basketball and like channel their energy into doing that and then not just punch picture frames. And the fact that didn't he say today that he's not looked into any sort of way to like kind of respond to how he like deals with his emotions?
Yeah, and
what was the exact quote?
I don't want to say he downplayed his incident because he said he was devastated watching the slippage. He's said he felt like he let his team down. But the weirdest answer, besides the revelation that he almost missed the entire season, the weirdest answer from his press conference came when he was asked if he had spoken to anyone about better handling his emotions. And that was a fair question because of all the incidents that he's had, whether it was beefing with a Celtics coach on the bench or punching holes in the wall or whatever it may be. There's a long line of instances, and it doesn't happen frequently, but it's happened consistently enough from year to year that it's an issue. And Smart replied, "I haven't really talked to anybody about it. I just have to go out there and do it. It's not a big deal. Up until this point, I've been doing real good this year. I think I've probably got, if I have a tech, one technical foul. So I've been doing pretty good. It's just some things you have to learn from, and this is one of those learning moments for me. You know what this kind of reminds me of? Is when Jared Sullinger would always gain weight, and he would suffer injuries, and he'd come back and say, you know, the light switch went off for me. This was my learning moment. This stress fracture injury has woken me up to what could happen if I continue being overweight. And he would always, always, always say the right things and say, this isn't a big issue, or I've learned from this. And Marcus Smart saying this, like, it rings pretty hollow if you say it's something you have to learn from. And this is one of those learning moments.
But there's been so many times in the past where you've literally punched things before.
Well, that
not learn from that.
That and the fact that he also said, I just have to go out there and do it. It's not a big deal. Up until this point, I've been doing real good this year. Like, congratulations, Marcus. You've gone through this season so far with only getting one technical foul or whatever it is. But you punched a damn picture frame in the team hotel. Like, it's not something where up until this point I've been doing real good. All it takes is one moment. And that's the problem with Marcus Smart, is that all it's taken is one moment. He can be good for most of the season. He can be good for all this time. But if you still lose yourself in the moment, shout out to Eminem, then it's all wasted. All the progress you've made is wasted. So it's got to become a consistent all the time thing. And I feel like I'm preaching, man. I feel like I'm preaching.
You are, man.
I feel like I'm preaching in this podcast. I hate to preach. I hate to kind of bash Marcus Smart.
It rings true, though. It makes,
I thoroughly enjoy as a player. Yeah, but
every other player in the NBA doesn't really have incidents like this, and it's
the only other one is like Draymond, right?
Yeah, and Draymond is a amazing basketball player and an all-star, so he can kind of has more leeway. But even he shouldn't be doing that. Like, he shouldn't be messing around and just losing your temper like this. So the thing that's interesting is that it's contract year for Marcus Smart, and I have no idea what the market's going to be for him. And do you think this, his kind of, I guess, aggression off the court, or his proneness to be make bad decisions, is going to affect how the Celtics approach him in free agency?
I don't think so, because it doesn't seem like they were too concerned.
That's fair.
Like they kind of knew this was Marcus Smart, and they just kind of treated it as Marcus Smart being Marcus Smart. And that seems somewhat problematic. And I don't think Brad Stevens is that way. I think Brad Stevens was legitimately disappointed that Marcus Smart lost his cool. And I think Brad Stevens, I'm sure he spoke to Marcus Smart about losing his cool and how he can't do that. And I'm sure Marcus Smart, to an extent, realizes it's something he needs to work on, even though he said, it's no big deal, I just have to go out and do it. But it doesn't feel like they're...
The Celtics aren't going to punish them. Like, it's just not the, like, it doesn't feel like what... They might do it very internally or very quietly and make them do something, but if, like, the whole, like, focus on process and not results is a kind of like, I feel like that would have to ring true throughout the entire organization, where it's like, you can't really harp on the one mistake the person made. You try to address the behavior. And so to get really down on something or focus on an incident like that doesn't seem like a Celtics type thing to do. They don't get too high or they don't get too low. So I can kind of Brad Stevens is not a kind of disciplinarian type coach where I don't know. I don't see him being benched for, something like this. He did miss a considerable amount of time, but I don't know. I just don't know the Celtics organization like that, and don't know if they would punish someone just for kind of their dumb decisions.
I wouldn't be surprised if they find him or something behind the scenes. But I also think to an extent he missed 11 games. He punished himself by almost ruining his entire season. So I think
he ruined the Celtics offense and defense. So they kind of want him, but they kind of need him back.
Yeah. Yeah. So and I don't want to say they're totally unconcerned about Smart's behavior, but I also don't think they're like, I don't think it would be something that would impact their feeling toward him, because he just did something that he's done in the past, and this time it worked out a little worse than it has in the past. So I think more importantly, from a standpoint of how it will impact his next contract, is the fact that he has stalled as a shooter and finisher, and he's stalled in a terrible, terrible place. Like, he didn't stall in a good area. He's
still not great.
and he still remains one of the single worst finishers on the planet from inside or outside the paint. So, yeah.
But think about how much they have missed him on the court. Like, even though he's not the greatest shooter in the world or finisher, he still has a positive impact offensively. I'm pretty sure he is the top in net rating in terms of two-guy pairings, and I think just in all types of offensive rating, Marcus Smart's pretty well. The whole HP Basketball, an article about how he still draws closeouts. He's pretty good in pick and roll. He's a very good passer. He has the connection with Al Horford. I think he's a positive player, and the fact that the Celtics have played worse, especially the offense in his absence, I don't know if it's directly because of that. I think there's also like factors of just being like the All-Star break and playing against some good teams, but that also helps his case. Like, he definitely does. He's a very talented basketball player and does things that, even though he's not a great shooter or finisher, they'd sure like prefer him to be playing right now.
Yeah, and he is back. And now that he is back, Stevens has some other decisions to make. And so,
damn good transition, Jay. Well done.
I appreciate that. So Brad went into the All-Star break saying that he was going to look at the lineups, at the rotation, at everything, all the data he's had, everything that's happened over the first half of the season, and look into changes. And what he said was he believes they were probably overdue for some tweaks. And then today he said he definitely plans to change how they rotate a little bit, even if it's not in the starting lineup. So, who do you think is... what do you think is going to happen? I'm trying to...
Aaron Baines is going to go not play anymore.
But Aaron Baines is part of a starting lineup that's been really freaking good.
That's fair. I don't know. He was playing some crazy-ass lineups. He was playing a lot of Mook Morris at the three with Tice and Monroe. And there was playing some crazy huge lineups. Even those three guys, and he was playing Tatum at shooting guard. I don't know how he's going to fluctuate the lineups more. It just feels like Baines and Monroe are super redundant in their roles. They're both big guys who can play inside and play, like, I guess, can cover fives. But it feels like Monroe is more dynamic because of his passing and his low post scoring than Baines. But Baines is probably a little bit better on defense, but it just doesn't feel like there's minutes for both of those guys. I don't know what the other changes would be.
Yeah. I mean, does he try to play Al Horford with the bench more? He said he thought a big benefit of Greg Monroe would be that he wouldn't have to do that anymore. But
it hasn't worked out.
But for a game sample size, super small sample size, that hasn't really worked out. So I think the most interesting thing will be to see what he does with the three bigs, and then how he tries to juice bench scoring. Like, does he have Marcus Smart run the bench? Does he have Marcus Smart come in as a first sub and play with the first unit, and then Kyrie comes back and plays with the bench?
That feels like it makes the most sense, because you have like the big lineup. It feels like that he likes the pairing of Tice and Monroe.
I don't know if that one's a good one.
Yeah, no, Tice is most effective as a five, and it's so maybe he's the guy who gets minutes cut. I'm all part of starting Tice. I just think the offense is so much better when they can play five out. And like, Tice is not the best three-point shooter, but he can still make it and like threatens a little bit. And just the spacing is so much better. But that's the kind of thing about adding Greg Monroe is there's no clear – like, clearly they're trying to look for this offensive boost, but I just think their offense is best designed for playing a five who can shoot. Brad Stevens talked about how he really dislikes playing two kind of traditional bigs who can't shoot the three. And it's just – so adding another big man just kind of confuses the rotation, where it's like you kind of have – you're forced to play Tice at the at the four, because there's so many other like just bigs on the roster that you want to get Tice some minutes, but he might not be effective next to Greg Monroe.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Will Monroe just become like a situational guy that they use to just kind of pulverize the right matchups? I almost feel like that's probably for the best if they do use that, but I don't know how he'll feel about that. And obviously, when you're actually coaching a team, his actual feelings come into account, and you might lose a guy, you might turn people disgruntled, whatever the case may be. So I'm interested to see what happens with that. I also think one thing someone brought up over the weekend that I thought was interesting was that under Brad Stevens, the Celtics have always kind of surged after the All-Star break, right? Like, 3 years ago, was it 3 years
ago? They always get better. They always Kaizen that shit. Incremental progress.
But, like, 3 years ago, they picked up Isaiah Thomas and made a surprising run to the playoffs. The year after that, they surged again. They were something like close to 500 after 25 games, maybe 13-12. Again, they surged. I think they ended up with, 48 wins that year. The year after that, same thing, slowest start, finish with 52 wins, surge past the Cleveland Cavaliers, get the one seed. This year feels different to me. I feel like in previous years, Brad was kind of figuring out his rotation heading into the All-Star break. He was getting a good grasp. He had experimented with his team. He had solved the puzzle. This year, it feels like the puzzle is a bit more puzzling to him. like he's looking at all the pieces laid out, and he's wondering, like, where the hell do I jam in this piece that looks like Marcus Morris? And how the hell do I fit in this other misshapen piece that's Greg Monroe? And it's like for the first time, I think, since Stevens got to the Celtics, he hasn't really figured that out heading into the All-Star break. So will he figure it out quickly? Maybe. Maybe he will.
It's possible. If anyone could do it, I think it might be that guy.
It's entirely possible. But this year does feel different. In the past, it's always felt like the Celtics were building to this moment and then just kind of...
Well, how much of that is because they just like went on a crazy winning streak? Like, if they had a much worse... If they were just like 500 right now, it might be that they're like figuring out rotations. But they went on this like... They way outperformed expectations. And now it feels like they've come back to earth. So it feels like more of a disappointment. Like they're in more confusion just because they went on, like, they way outperformed expectations by winning, 16 games in a row?
Yes. That was a 16 game winning streak. Correct.
And it's crazy. Like, that's just not like something normally that happens. So it may be just like a perception type thing where they feel like maybe this is the exact place Stevens is normally at in the season, where he's kind of figuring out different lineups. He literally mentioned he's changing lineups still. But it's just, it happened that they like pulled off a lot of bullshit wins earlier in the season. And so it's just, it could just be a normal Brad Stevens year. Who knows?
But like,
is it perception or is it to the like the pattern?
I think it's a change from the pattern. So the first, when Isaiah got traded, they had won for the last five games, I believe, heading into the All-Star break. And Stevens actually made a call to keep some of the same guys together because he thought they were figuring things out. And then, of course, they traded for Isaiah and Gigi Datome, and they figured things out even more.
Shouts to Gigi.
And Jay Crowder, who really helped when they did figure things out that year. The next year, I believe, was the David Lee year, when David Lee was playing like 20 minutes a game, and then David Lee stopped playing, and Stevens figured out the rotations.
David Lee was obese. Without, didn't work out whatsoever.
But then Stevens figured out the rotations without him, and they surged. So in the past, it's always been like Brad was just figuring things out, and Brad had figured things out by this point. Now, I do think he's still searching. And maybe that's just because Marcus Smart's been out. They haven't had Shane Larkin. They haven't had kind of the rotation Stevens had envisioned. And maybe he has a perfect idea in his head of what he wants to do, what he plans to do, what the Celtics should do. But I haven't seen the map in action, and especially since Greg Monroe got back, it's kind of just felt jumbled.
The thing is, I like agree that he hasn't fully figured it out, but I think that actually Marcus Smart plays a very important piece because to me, if you had to pick out the Celtics' best five guys, the guys you would imagine playing in crunch time, to me it's obviously Kyrie, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Al Horford. I imagine you would like just go small and play your craziest, most athletic defense. And so I feel like the best lineup involves Marcus Smart being there. And so his 11-game absence, to bring it full circle back to Marcus Smart, I think has a big impact of just how the team's feeling heading into the All-Star break. This is like a team relying on Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, who are quite young and neither of them have put in a full season of basketball. Marcus Smart has done that repeatedly. So I don't know. It feels like it's difficult to necessarily compare it to past years just because what other kind of main starters was Brad Stevens missing in those seasons? It's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm too much of a sports optimist, but I feel like they could get it together just with a different timeline because now Marcus Smart is coming back directly after the All-Star break.
I respect the optimism. And I do agree. Obviously, Smart's a big piece. Obviously, they've been missing a player who, especially like you said, in close games down the stretch, they always, always, always have Marcus Smart in their finishing lineup. And Brad Stevens likes to go small. And lately, it's felt like he hasn't had the right personnel when he goes small. Because
he doesn't have enough guards. They just it was Terry Rozier and Kyrie was hurt for a while, too. They played some crazy. There was a three-game stretch where it was just only Terry Rozier and Al Horford played point guard for all three games. They happened to win them just because they played the Hawks and who else? What was the other garbage team that came in here? The Knicks. Yep. Oh, yes, the Knicks. And then they had the crazy buzzer beater. But yeah, that was some wild basketball that there was really like they had no business winning. So it's kind of impressive that they even got the wins they got considering like the health of the team.
Maybe Brad will just unleash Al Horford as the point guard the rest of the way. Maybe that's his rotation.
Go super small, yeah.
And then just have Marcus Smart play center.
That's the thing about Marcus Smart is he can play any position at any moment. He's basically a point guard and a power forward, basically a point guard in the center. It's amazing.
It is amazing. I think that's a good place to end this thing. To everyone who has not subscribed to us yet, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. Again, we are the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. We are the greatest Celtics podcast ever. And we have wild takes like Marcus Smart should play center and Al Horford should be point guard and Brad Stevens.
And we also think Marcus Smart should maybe address some of his emotional reactions to negative news. Yeah, that's just me. I don't know. I don't want to speak for you.
We think it's kind of more important that he punched a picture frame and missed 11 games. Than that he only has one technical foul for the entire season. Maybe that's just
priorities.
Maybe that's just us, though.
Kaizen.
That's it for this episode of Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and John Corrales.